Welcome to Thoughts on the Market. I'm Michael Zizas, Morgan Stanley's Global Head of Fixed Income and Thematic Research.
And I'm Seth Carpenter, Global Chief Economist.
And on this special episode of Thoughts on the Market, we'll be taking a look at how the 2024 elections could impact the outlook for inflation. It's Wednesday, April 10th at 4 p.m. in New York. Seth, earlier this morning, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics released the Consumer Price Index data for March, and it's probably an understatement to say it's been a much-anticipated report because it gives us some signal into both the pace of inflation and any potential Fed rate cut path for 2024. I want to get into the longer-term picture around what the upcoming U.S. election could mean for inflation, but first, I'd love your immediate take on this morning's data.
Absolutely, Mike. This morning's CPI data were absolutely critical. You are right. Much anticipated by markets. Everyone looking for a read-through from those data to what it means for the Fed. I think there's no two ways about it. The market saw the stronger-than-expected inflation data as reducing the likelihood that the Fed would start cutting rates in June. June was our baseline for when the Fed would start cutting rates, and I think we are going to have to sharpen our pencils and ask just how much is this going to make the Fed want to wait. I think over time, however, we still see inflation drifting down over the course of this year and into next year, and so we still think the Fed will get a few rate hikes in. But you wanted to talk longer term. You wanted to talk about elections. And when I think about how elections could affect inflation, it's usually through fiscal policy, through choices by the president and the Congress to raise taxes or lower taxes, and by choices by the Congress and the president to increase or decrease spending. So when you think about this upcoming election, what are the main scenarios that you see for fiscal policy and an expansion, perhaps, of the deficit?
Yeah, I think it's important to understand first that the type of election outcome that historically has catalyzed a deficit expansion is one where one party gets complete control of both the White House and both chambers of Congress. In 2025, what we think this would manifest in if the Democrats had won is kind of a mix of tax extensions, as well as some spending items that they weren't able to complete during Biden's first term, probably somewhat offset by some tax increases. On net, we think that would be incremental about $500 billion over 10 years, or maybe $40 to $50 billion in the first year. If Republicans are in a position of control, then we think you're looking at an extension of most of the expiring corporate tax cuts that expire at the end of 2025. That adds up to somewhere around $1 trillion spread over 10 years, or maybe $100 to $150 billion in the first year.
So what I'm hearing you say is wide range of possible outcomes, because you didn't even touch on what might happen if you've got a split government, so even smaller fiscal expansion. So when I take that range from a truly modest expansion, if at all, with a split government to a slight expansion from the Democrats, a slightly bigger one from a Republican sweep, I'm hearing numbers that clearly directionally should lead to some inflationary pressures, but I'm not really sure they're big enough to really start to move the needle in terms of inflationary outcomes. And I guess the other part that we have to keep in mind is the election's happening in November of this year. The new president, if there's a new president, the new Congress would take seats in the beginning of the year next year. And so there's always a bit of a lag between when a new government takes control and when legislation gets passed, and then there's another lag between the legislation and the outcome on the economy. And by the time we get to call it the end of 2025 or the beginning of 2026, I think we really will have seen a lot of dissipation of the inflation that we have now. So it doesn't really sound like, at least from those baseline scenarios, that we're talking about a huge impetus for inflation. Would you think that's fair?
I think that's fair. And then it sort of begs the question of, if not from fiscal policy, is there something we need to consider around monetary policy? And so around the Fed, Chair Powell's term ends in January of 2026, meaning potential for a new Fed chair depending on the next U.S. president. So Seth, what do you think the election could mean for monetary policy then?
Yeah, that's a great question, Mike. And it's one that, as you know well, we tend to get from clients, which is why you and I jointly put out some research with other colleagues on just what scope is there for there to be a, call it, particularly accommodative Fed chair under that Republican sweep scenario? I would say my take is not the biggest risk to worry about right now. There are two seats on the Federal Reserve Board that are going to come open for whoever wins the election as president to appoint. That's the chair, clearly very important, and then one of the members of the Board of Governors. But it's critical to remember there's a whole committee. So there are seven members of the Board of Governors plus five voting members across the Federal Reserve Bank presidents. And to get a change in policy that is so big that would have massive inflationary impacts, I really think you'd have to have the whole committee on board. And I just don't see that happening. The Fed is set up institutionally to try to insulate from exactly that sort of political influence. So I don't think we would ever get a Fed that would simply rubber stamp any president's desire for monetary policy.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And then clients tend to ask about two other concerns, with particularly concerns with a Republican sweep scenario, which would be the impact of potentially higher trade tariffs and restrictions on immigration. What's your read here in terms of whether or not either of these are reliable in terms of their impact on inflation?
Yeah, super topical. And I would say, at the very least, we have some experience now with tariff policy. And what did we see during the last episode where there was the trade war with China? I think it's very natural to assume that higher tariffs mean the cost of imported goods are going to be higher, which would lead to higher inflation. And to some extent, that was true, but it was a much smaller, much more muted effect than I think you might otherwise assume, given numbers like 25% tariffs, or as has been kicked around a few times, maybe 60% tariffs. And the reason for that change is a few things. One, not all of the goods being brought in under tariffs are final consumer goods where the price would just go straight through to something like the CPI. A lot of them were intermediate goods. And so what we saw in the last round of tariffs was some disruption to U.S. manufacturing, disruption to production in the United States because the cost of production went up. And so it was as much a supply shock as it was anything else. For those final consumer goods, you could see some pass-through, but remember, there's also the offset through the exchange rate that matters a lot. And consumers, they have a willingness to pay or maybe a willingness not to pay. And so sellers aren't always able to pass through the full cost of the tariffs. And so as a result, I think the net effect there is some modestly higher inflation. But really, it's important to keep in mind that hit to economic activity that over time could actually go in the opposite direction and be disinflationary. Immigration. Very different story, and it has been very much in the news recently, and we have seen a huge surge in immigration last year. We expect it to continue this year, and we think it's contributing to the faster run rate that we've seen in the economy without continued inflationary pressure. So I think it's a natural question to ask, if immigration was restricted, would we see labor shortages? Would that drive up inflation? And the answer is maybe. However, a few things are really critical. One, the Fed is still in restrictive territory now, and they're only going to start to lower rates if and when we see inflation come down. So the starting point will matter a lot. And second, when we did our projections, we took a lot of input from where the CBO's estimates are, and they've already been assuming that immigration flows really start to normalize a bit in 2025 and a lot more in 2026, back to run rates that are more like pre-COVID rates. And so against that backdrop, I think a change in immigration policy might be less inflationary because we'd already be in a situation where those flows were coming down. But that's a good time for me to turn things around, Mike, and throw it right back to you. So you've been thinking about the elections. You run thematic research here. I've heard you say to clients more than once that there is some scope, but limited scope, for macro markets to think about the outcome from the election, but lots of scope from a micro perspective. So if we were thinking about the effect of the election on equity markets, on individual sectors, what would be your early read on where we should be focusing most?
So we've long been saying that the reliable market impacts from this election, at least this far out, appear to be more micro than macro. And so, for example, in a Republican sweep scenario, we feel pretty confident that there would be a heavier skew towards extending corporate tax cut provisions that are expiring at the end of 2025. And if you look at who benefits fundamentally from those extensions, it tends to be companies that do more business domestically in the U.S. and tend to be a bit smaller. Sectors that tend to come in the scope include industrials and telecom. And in terms of size of company, it tends to skew more towards small caps.
So I can see that, Mike, but let me make it even more provocative, because a question I have got from clients recently is, the Inflation Reduction Act, which in lots of ways is helping to spur spending on infrastructure, is helping to spur spending on green energy transition. What's the chance that that gets repealed if the election goes to Trump?
We see the prospects for the IRA to get repealed as quite limited. Even in a Republican sweep scenario, the challenge for folks who might not want to see the law exist anymore is that many of the benefits of this law have already been committed, and the geographic area where they've been committed overlays with many of the districts represented by Republicans who would have to vote for its repeal. And so they might be voting against the interests of their districts to do that. So we think this policy is a lot stickier than people perceive. The campaign rhetoric will probably be pretty elevated around the idea of repealing it. But ultimately, we think most of the money behind the IRA will be quite durable. And this is something that should accrue positively to the clean tech sector in particular.
Got it. Well, Mike, as always, I love being able to take time and talk to you.
Seth, likewise, thanks for taking the time to talk. And as a reminder, if you enjoy Thoughts on the Market, please take a moment to rate and review us on the Apple Podcast app. It helps more people find the show.
The preceding content is informational only and based on information available when created. It is not an offer or solicitation, nor is it tax or legal advice. It does not consider your financial circumstances and objectives and may not be suitable for you.